we could go buy 10, 20, 30 houses, and we probably need 30, 40, 50 houses to kind of get the cash flow that we wanted and have the portfolio size that would kind of make sense. Or we could just buy like one or two apartment buildings.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Logan Fast is an active investor in single family and multifamily in Phoenix, Arizona, Omaha, Nebraska, Columbus, Ohio, and Las Vegas, Nevada. He travels around the country with his wife in their self-converted Sprinter van and runs his business remotely with his brother and business partner, Colton. Logan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, man, this is wild. You win the award for one of the more unique places that anyone has ever recorded a podcast from. So if you don't mind, tell us, where are you right now?
Yeah, man, we're in La Jolla, San Diego right now. We're just sitting here by the beach, kind of hanging out and getting some work done.
Okay. Very cool. You know, the same question that everybody who comes in this show is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there? Would love to hear kind of that journey from, you know, where you started to how you wound up in a van in La Jolla, California, road tripping around the country and running a commercial real estate business.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of like a lot of people, I started because I found myself in a job that I didn't really like. And part of it too was I was right when I graduated college, which was about 4 years ago now. I went back, moved in with my mom, and, you know, it's pretty much after 4 years out in college, you know, I was ready to pretty much be done with that. So I was kind of just searching the internet, looking for ways to do that cost effectively. I kind of came across house hacking, and then that kind of led me into the whole world of real estate investing. And I felt like I kind of hit the jackpot once I learned about all this stuff and that all this existed. And from there, I just kind of dove in, ended up buying my first place the following January. It was a threeplex. And then I went full-time a few months later, started wholesaling, flipping a little bit, buying small multifamily. And that's pretty much it. It's just been kind of growing the wholesaling and flipping business and continuing to build up a portfolio along the way.
Right. That's fascinating. How did you fund those opportunities?
So a lot of it was either self-funded or funded through partnerships. I took most of the money that I was making through wholesaling and flipping, and I was putting it into buy and hold stuff. And I was also using partnerships where if I found a good enough deal, the other side kind of covered my half. And then most of them we were able to refinance within a couple months, get all the money back anyways, and then just recycle it into another deal.
Right. That's interesting. What did you do to convince partners to join you? I mean, you're out of school, you know, you don't have an enormous track record, but how'd that conversation typically go?
You know, I think the thing is I just kept showing up. I went to every single real estate investor event in town, seeing these guys twice a month, every single month. They, you know, I kind of knew what I was talking about. They could tell I read all the books. I was listening to the podcast. I was doing some wholesale deals. Like I was actively trying to figure things out. I was always coming to them for advice and taking action on their advice. So that goes a really long way. I've found that people that are successful, especially in this industry, they get really excited about helping newer investors that actually are there to make it happen and are taking action.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now that's fascinating. So you still do wholesaling today?
I do. Yeah. We're wholesaling in Phoenix, Omaha, and a little bit in Columbus and Vegas.
Okay, cool. What's that been like building teams? I mean, you can't just, obviously you guys are on the road, so you got to have some semblance of boots on the ground, meeting with sellers, you know, people getting contracts signed, things like that. So what's that process been like building those teams?
Yeah. So I've got really good connections in Omaha from doing it for a few years there. So honestly, most of the stuff can get handled over the phone, but it's pretty nice to have somebody be able to go just do an inspection, take pictures, all that kind of stuff. And then as far as Phoenix goes, my brother lives there. So he handles a lot of the boots on the ground stuff. He handles a ton of stuff with operations. And, you know, that's one of the main reasons that we're able to do this is because he kind of came on board, done a fantastic job. And then recently we've hired a couple of guys. We've hired an acquisition guy and a dispo guy. So they've only been with us a couple of weeks now. So they're doing great so far. But yeah, we're just kind of going into to really building a team and kind of getting to the level, getting to a higher level of the business where we can, you know, kind of be business owners instead of working in the business.
Right. Sure. Yeah. There's always that conundrum between getting stuff done and then just for, you know, being an employee yourself. I wonder, mm-hmm. are you guys only doing single family or are you also doing commercial assets and wholesaling commercial stuff?
So as far as wholesaling goes, we are mostly looking at single family, but we are actively pursuing multifamily and more to hold. We're closing on 13 units in Omaha here in a couple weeks. And yeah, we're looking to basically hold any multifamily opportunities that we come across as long as it makes sense, obviously.
Sure. What is your thinking in that regard? And why are you going that direction when you can?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. One is mostly I kind of look at my time and single family. We could go out, we could go buy 10, 20, 30 houses, and we probably need 30, 40, 50 houses to kind of get the cash flow that we wanted and have the portfolio size that would kind of make sense. Or we could just buy like one or two apartment buildings, and that would be just a fraction of the headache of trying to buy that many single family houses.
Right. Yeah. You could, I think you said it there. You could buy one or two buildings and you could have them all under one roof or close to it maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have a fraction of those headaches. That's really cool. So at this point you figured out wholesaling, are you doing any flipping anymore? Or is that off the table as well?
Yeah, we do flips, mostly just kind of smaller cosmetic type flips. Nothing too time intensive. That's one of the main factors that we look at is how much time is this going to take? So, you know, if it's an easy flip and we just need to go in, do some paint and flooring and that kind of thing, get it listed, like, yeah, we'll take it down and do that.
Right. But a heavy rehab you may pass on. I wonder, you know, one of the things I ran into when I did flips, because I did a ton of that in a previous life, thankfully. But one of the things that was getting not just your crews lined up, but also getting even your project managers in place that could run the projects and get them finished to the finish quality that I would want. Like I never, mm-hmm. never quite got that figured out with bringing other project managers on. In the end, you'd get done. You're like, okay, well you missed X, Y, Z, and that's going to cost us 10 grand to go back and redo this. I just never figured it out. So how do you guys overcome that?
Yeah. I mean, since we're not doing such big volume, it probably doesn't come into play. We're not really doing four or five houses at a time. We've got two flips going on right now, so we can give it a little bit more attention. And then another thing was we'll rely on partners. Like if we were going to get in and kind of scale the flipping side more, we would probably go partner with somebody on the construction side of things that's kind of their bread and butter. You know, we specialize in finding deals. We can't specialize in everything. So I'd like to find somebody if we were going to go that route that does, and, you know, just let them basically handle what they're good at.
Right. No, that makes a heck of a lot of sense. And I wish I had met you maybe 6 or 7, take that back, 9 years ago. That would have saved me a few years of headache there. I think that's a great idea. Partner with people on the construction side and let them do that. What mm-hmm. about, let's talk about your lifestyle a little bit. You have begun investing in real estate. You figured out how to build teams. At what point in time did you say, hey, look, I'm going to convert my own van and travel the country with my wife?
Yeah. So we were actually looking at maybe doing some travel abroad. We kind of had this goal to do about a year abroad and kind of travel the world. And, you know, that kind of got shut down when the world shut down. So this is kind of the next best thing. We started seeing that people were actually doing this. It was feasible. And, you know, we didn't know we were going to do this exactly. We kind of went in to look at vans and see kind of which one would fit. Like a big thing is, can I stand up in it? So we were at the dealership, we were looking at this van, and it turns out it was about the only size of van I could stand up in. And it was about the only one on the market. So like in the whole country. So we just kind of just grabbed it up and started working on it. And it's one of those things where it's, you know, it's one of those things we've always wanted to do and we just went and did it. It's kind of, yeah. So it's been pretty great, you know, going through that whole process.
What's it like? I mean, there's what I think people, the grandeur of travel, which I've done a lot of it. I've tried working from the road, have worked from the road successfully, but it also comes with its ups and its downs. Like what are some things that you feel like this may cost you in business being on the road full time?
Yeah. I don't really look at it in terms of what it'll cost. You know, there definitely is opportunity cost
right.
of doing it. But at the same time, I'm able to basically take better care of myself, I feel like, have a better peace of mind, a better mental health, and that allows me to be more effective. And it's taught me a lot about delegating too. You know, we've relied on virtual assistants more, and we've documented things so much better. And, you know, it's actually been huge in growth to not have as much time to put into the business. You know, a lot of people get stuck in the trap of 14 hours a day thinking that that's the only way to do it. But this has kind of forced me to see the other side and work on that.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I like that. What have been some keys? And I know we talked a little bit about this earlier in building teams, but what have been some things that were hard for you to delegate maybe that you ultimately ended up letting go of?
So the biggest thing has always been acquisitions, talking to sellers, you know, because that's really where the money's made. If you've got an acquisitions guy going out there and he's not saying the right things to sellers, or, you know, he's just kind of messing up deals all over the place, that's a lot of money on the line. So that's a really hard one to let go of. But, you know, we found an awesome guy, and you basically just have to give someone a chance and give them all the help they need and give them a place to be successful, and, you know, just let them do their thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. How do you guys come up with an offer price?
Offer price, we kind of look at it a few different ways. Typically we're going in and, you know, it depends on what market too, you know, people in Phoenix are buying it. They'll buy it 90% or so. And so we're doing the 90% ARV minus repairs and then factoring in a wholesale fee. Yeah. Omaha's a little bit different, but basically, if the deal's tight, we'll kind of go to one of our buyers and just say, hey, like, we're not completely sure about this one. We know it's going to be a little tight. Like, what do you guys think about this? And we'll just get a price from our buyers before it's under contract. And, you know, then we're not coming in having to cancel contracts and do that whole thing. That's why wholesalers get a bad rep anyways.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I haven't heard, and I guess it might make sense, you know, a Phoenix market paying 90%. ARV, it's a sign of the times, I bet, you know, that just shows people. I mean, gosh, not but a couple of years ago, it was 70% ARV minus repairs. And that was pretty much the standard, I would say, across the industry. And that number kept creeping up, which is one of the reasons I got out of wholesaling and flipping altogether. It's just like the margin just got tighter and tighter. How do you think guys are making money paying 90% minus repairs? Like, how much meat is left in the bone by the time you do all your repairs and then factor in realtors commissions and all that stuff upon disposition? Like, how's anybody making money at that?
Yeah. You know, I think the best buyers or at least the guys that are paying the most they're with funds. They've got, you know, a ton of capital basically to deploy, and they're just looking to sit on these assets. They're not looking to go flip these. They're just looking for a long-term hold. They're looking for somewhere better to place their money than the stock market or bonds or, you know, any other asset class. Basically, maybe their analysis says the market's going to appreciate and they kind of believe in that. But yeah, for whatever reason, I think it's a lot of these funds that are buying them up and just sitting on them.
Right. Yeah. We certainly saw a lot of that too, here in the Memphis market. When the hedge funds came to town, it also became much, much harder to compete, just because, you know, I didn't have the pockets that they did. Couldn't afford to pay nearly as much as they could afford to pay. So that's really fascinating. When you look to your business, like, what is the next? I know you said you guys are holding as much as you can on the multifamily side, but if you were to fast forward 2 to 5 years, what do you want it to look like?
Yeah, I want to continue. I basically want to copy and paste the single family side of things. And I know it doesn't go verbatim into multifamily, but I want to do acquisitions on a higher level, like we're doing in single family and going out in multis in multiple different markets, doing a lot of lead generation and acquiring the properties. And basically, I would love to have a bunch of partners, or, you know, maybe it's just a handful that I can partner with in whatever market and basically keep equity in these deals and, you know, continue to build a portfolio, even though it's a smaller portion of bigger deals. It's basically the great thing about commercial assets is it's pretty much hands off for a lot of the people involved. You know, obviously except the operator side, which I don't really want to be on.
Yeah, that's interesting. You mentioned something there. You said you want to do lead generation and pick up part of the equity in the deal. What does that mean?
So basically, I just want my business to run and to be finding the deals, be finding multifamily deals, whether that be through relationships, through marketing, and just acquiring off-market deals and partnering with people that are more on the operation side that can go in, reposition these assets, and they take care of a lot of the rehab, the property management, like the asset management side of things. But you know, we plan on holding the asset together.
Right. Yeah. You could stake out part of the equity in the deal for bringing it. You could stake out maybe whatever your finder's fee would have been and have that wrap up into the deal. Yeah. That's brilliant. I like that. I like that a lot. That, you know, and that's one of the two key components for anybody in commercial real estate, right? There's two things you need: deals and money. So if you're able to go out and find the deals, then you're solving half of most operators' problems. So.
Exactly. And yeah, I guess I didn't even mention, like, I would like to be finding some of the money too. And, you know, maybe it's not the full capital raise on every single deal, but I've got some really good relationships right now, even that I'm trying to place money into some bigger deals. And I think that, I'm sure you've seen it, just continues to grow. I think the more money you place into deals, you know, their friends hear about it, they're getting a good return, and just continuing it to snowball into more and more deals.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. That is very cool, man. I love what you guys are doing. I love how you have taken your business and elected early on to make it a lifestyle business and really form your work around what you do and not what you do around your work. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. I like that a lot. And I just love how you guys have grown teams. You've done a lot of different asset classes, and you're also looking to do things that are more measurable and repeatable. And that's one of the things I've seen in the wholesale side, where it's a vast paycheck, but it's also, people rarely take the time to set up the systems that serve them on the back end for that. So I think that's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. For most, it's just a high paying job, but you know, the people I really look up to in on the business side of things have systemized it, and you know, they can take months off from their business, and it keeps making money.
Right. That's awesome, man. Logan, let's jump here into the final four questions. The first one is this: if I give you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
So I think the first thing I would do with it I would buy a bunch of real estate related books, and probably mindset related books too, and get my mind right and learn what successful people think about and do. And I would just learn the game of whatever facet of real estate you're interested in. Go read 5 or 10 books on it and then start taking action on that. You could probably spend the other $19,000 or $19,500 on marketing and go find a deal.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's fantastic. Question number two is this: if you'd help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I would say the mistake I would help people avoid is waiting to get started. I think most people just wait so long, whether it's being worried about getting a high return or what, and that, you know, their money's sitting on the sideline and they're not getting the experience that whole time. So I would say find somebody that's experienced, find a partner, and go add value to them and just get started into a deal. Like, one deal is not going to make or break you.
Right. No, that's great. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I would say it's on the wholesale side of things. It's finding these people and solving a lot of difficult problems for them. You know, a lot of these houses are sitting there run down for years, and you know, whether it's tracking these people down that are hard to find, or just, you know, whatever they're going through, going and just helping them out.
Right. Yeah. And that's an overlooked, you bring up a unique point there. That's an overlooked part of this job. Certainly, I think anybody who's been in it, especially in the single family side, has been in it long enough to encounter some really wonky situations with some really people that have what they may perceive as a no way out situation.
And, yeah, exactly.
And you come, I can remember people, tears in their eyes, selling me their house, like, oh man, thank you so much. Thank you so much. You're like, this is good for both of us, because you know, they're getting to offload something that's been a mental, emotional, financial drain, and you know, they get their problem solved. So that's absolutely fantastic. Logan, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Just shoot me a text at 402-250-8357. We could find a time to jump on the phone.
That's probably awesome. The best way. Awesome. Logan, thanks so much for your time today. Enjoy, what'd you say, La Jolla?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, enjoy La Jolla for us, for those of us who are not sitting here watching the ocean today. And yeah, certainly appreciate you coming on. It was great.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.